It's a new day for every American. Start today right by getting facts and only facts at dnewman.org. You want the truth about today's important matters? Truth coming up. Here's Dan.
Just 3 days left of the month of May 2018. Today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Hey, welcome to dnewman.org. Glad to have you here. I know everyone had a great holiday yesterday, Memorial Day. I know during your busy day of barbecue and gathering around the swimming pool and the dining room table with family and friends, you took a moment, you paused, and you were thankful for all those who have gone to war on our behalf and have paid the ultimate price, protected our freedom with their life. Memorial Day, every year, we need to be thankful. Sure makes it a whole lot easier when you have a whole day that's specifically designed for doing just that. We got a great week ahead this week, a lot of issues on the table to discuss, and something has come to light. You know, just a couple of days ago, the NFL issued their new decision on the anthem protest by players before games. They're going to require every player to stand on the sidelines at attention during the playing of the national anthem in pregame. And for those players who don't want to do it, they're not going to be allowed to kneel as they have all of last season and beginning, I guess, sometime during preseason of the 2016 season. They'll have to stay in a locker room. If they don't do that, the team will be fined. So we're going back into this cycle of what the heck are they doing? Why protest police brutality in America, from white cops to African Americans? Why are they doing that by protesting during the national anthem? We've never gotten a really good answer for that. Nevertheless, it is their right to protest. But what it has done, it has brought to the forefront the necessity to figure out what police brutality in the United States really looks like. Let's take some of the emotion out as much as possible. And I don't want to say take it all out because you can't do it. I mean, this is a very emotional issue and should be, because people's lives, people's health, and the criminal justice system of the United States, which is promised to operate and function properly according to the Constitution for all of us, is at stake here. So where do we get facts about it? You may remember, several months ago, we referenced a report from Harvard University. It was kind of a preliminary report that came out with some statistics, and the one that stuck in everybody's mind, they couldn't believe it, but it was kind of a preliminary study, a release of part of the study that I have in my never nicotine-stained hands today for you to discuss in detail. But the one statistic that popped out from that, I guess, prelude that we shared was regarding white cops shooting and killing African-American males and vice versa. And that study by Harvard University, and let's just be completely honest with you, and we've got to be honest about all this stuff because what we're about to talk about are facts, pure statistics that are verified. A white cop is 18 and a half times more likely to be shot from an African American male than that African American male is to be shot by that white cop. Now, boy, when I say that, people go crazy and start talking. That's a fact, folks. That's in the United States over the previous 2 years, 2015, 2016. It seems like every incidence of violence by police against African Americans in the U.S. today is linked to some type of issue of racial profiling and police brutality. It's, in my opinion, likely that biases have definitely played some role in many of these cases, such as the killings of Eric Garner and Philando Castile. You remember both of those, I'm sure. Each case of police officer-involved violence against a black citizen does not automatically show racial biases. And emotionally, every time one of these happens, people begin to scream and holler that it must have happened because of racial bias. For Americans to think the same bias controls every officer based on a few cases is simply not reasonable. It's definitely not fair. And it's not a truthful image of all police. No doubt, and let's make this very clear, no doubt racial biases do exist within some police officers in this country. And police racial bias existing in just one cop is too many. But building a social or political agenda on an untruthful fact, which there is no such thing, a fact is a fact, that the police as one block of people have the same biases from coast to coast in every police force is dangerous, especially if we all hope to understand the racial aspect of police brutality. And that's what I want to do, at least start a conversation, a real, meaningful, statistical, factual-based conversation about this today. Too often, a brutal police officer is presumed to be white and male, even though not all cases of police violence or brutality, which happen far too often, necessarily involve white policemen. Why does this bias exist against white cops? And does the data confirm this commonly held notion? At some point, hopefully, Americans who really want to resolve this issue, and I'm one of them, and take measures that can and will at least begin a process to change it, which we've got to do, folks. We've got to quit all of the noise and screaming and hollering, not having facts to base that on. We got to take an objective view of the issue instead of making determinations based purely on emotions and feelings. We need to look for evidence instead of relying on emotion and making sweeping statements about police brutality. If we're going to fix it, we got to know exactly what and why it's going on. We should break down available data to investigate tendencies of police by race and by gender. Hadn't heard much about gender in this conversation so far. By doing this, we might be able to develop a more factual analysis of racism and police brutality that currently exist, and we may can base it on facts and then do something about it that will work. It'll stop it, or at least get it start stopping. Doesn't this make better sense than continuing down the road we're on? If we keep going this way, no real solution is ever going to be found. I think we can all agree on that. Lots of hollering, lots of screaming, lots of finger pointing. No factual resolution yet. One key area of understanding is citizens' feelings, emotions, regarding where police brutality comes from. And folks, I don't want to diminish people's emotions about this topic. They're real. They're absolutely real. They happen, and they should happen. We're all humans, and we're made up by intellect and emotions. In larger American cities, women represent about 16.5% of all full-time cops, while African Americans and Hispanics make up 25.2% and 17.3% of full-time officers, respectively. Yet, listen to this, citizen complaints against officers in metropolitan police departments hardly ever reflect those numbers. Based on facts, data provided by the nonprofit Police Foundation's Public Safety Open Data Portal, that's in Cincinnati, only 8.6% of citizen complaints from 2010 to 2015 were against police women. In Indianapolis, only 10.5% of complaints from 2012 to 2016 were against women officers. For these big cities, they have very different population makeups, Cincinnati and Indy. The statistical differences are shown further in the racial breakdown of officers who had complaints lodged against them. So we looked at gender. Let's look at race. In Cincinnati, only 25% of officers who faced complaints were non-white. And in Indy, that figure was approximately 20%. In both cities, over 70% of all complaints were lodged against white male police officers. Let's put the media stories and the political biases aside for just a moment. These figures appear to confirm the stereotype of white male officers being responsible for police brutality. Most often, This blame centers on deadly shootings of black males by white officers. Yet, complaint stats do not necessarily speak to officers' actual brutality. Some complaints may be the result of social and cultural biases or preconceived notions of police intent and history. We're going to get into that in just a moment. Cincinnati police data from the last 20 years shows that for every white subject targeted by a white male police officer, 3.92 black subjects were targeted. Remember that number, 3.92 black subjects for every complaint against a white male officer. Meanwhile, for every white subject targeted by a black male officer, 4 black subjects were targeted. Perhaps surprisingly, these stats show a very small difference in racial targeting between white and black male officers, yet white officers get all the blame. It's very difficult to study all this, explained Justin Feldman, a doctoral candidate at the Harvard School of Public Health, in an interview. But there has been for decades research on the influence of officers' race and their likelihood of using force on a subject of their own race versus a subject of another race. Basically, he's continuing here, the finding is that black officers are no less likely to use force against black subjects than are white officers. Pinning down the reasons for this phenomenon is pretty difficult. And you know that. We're trying to get a handle around it and have been for some time. One potential reason is the fact that black officers are often more likely to be assigned to precincts with greater numbers of black residents. In this study that we're referring to from Harvard, a Cincinnati Police Department officer who wanted to only be identified as Officer T elaborated on this in an interview in this study. He said this, "I sometimes do undercover work, but my undercover experience in black precincts is pretty limited. Black officers are much more likely to be undercover in black neighborhoods and environments of black people because they don't stand out as much. Another explanation may be that black police officers also carry anti-black biases. We never talked about this. I've never even thought about it until today. Studies and firsthand accounts by black police officers confirm this possibility. Neil Franklin, who is an African-American officer who served in the Baltimore Police Department and Maryland State Police, he's been around. He admitted his own previous prejudices during service in an interview with Vox. When I'd see a young black male, he said, in a particular neighborhood, or his pants were sagging a little bit, or he walked a certain way, he said, my first thoughts were, oh, I wonder if he's selling drugs. Whatever the reason for this, efforts to eliminate any racial bias of police brutality by diversifying police departments may be misinformed. It may not just be because there's too many whites, not enough African Americans. But that didn't work in Baltimore. 70% of their force is black today. They still have the same riots, the same crime rates. People often think that having a different color of officer might solve the brutality issue, but it hadn't been that way so far. Of course, nationwide data by itself does not tell the whole story. I get that, because every place is so different. Other sources of information specific to region and case, including municipal level comparisons between officer and subject race and eyewitness testimonies, social makeup in the communities, you know, unemployment, all those kind of things factor in. They're critical to determine whether an individual shooting represents a case of police brutality. Data from the Indianapolis Police Department over the last 2 years, and this is an example, suggest a big difference in the targets in white and black officer-involved shootings. While black officers targeted white subjects about twice as often as black subjects, white officers targeted black subjects about twice as often as white subjects. The contrast between the Indy statistics and those of Cincinnati, where black officers seem no less likely to use force against black subjects, may be tied to some peculiar circumstances of officers working in each police department. So, and again, it goes back to the social cultural makeup, the geography, the economics of various cities. And those two particular cases, and those are two big cities, they're almost identical. black on white and white on black police shootings. So drawing one broad conclusion from the data about the role of the officer's race and police-involved shootings may not be factual. And in a lot of cases in this study, it's not factual. However, that message is the backbone of the data-driven method. Instead of restricting ourselves to publicized stories and brutality examples, nationwide blanket statistics and a single conclusion about the entire police force, we should try hard to be objective in understanding that all the facts, statistics, and emotions that all go into determination of facts of the issue. There's a bunch of them. We got to look at all of them. One way to do it is by using numerical data that specifically pertains to the region or type of case in question. Now, getting data pulled together, that's not just something you can do every day. You've got so many police forces, so many criminal justice operations in the United States. It's going to take time. And now, folks, this data collection statistics have begun to pour in, and Harvard is just one place where they're doing this in a very dramatic and very sophisticated manner. Time is going to give us more specific information. This is like the second round of this on a national basis. Data in all of these cases may also help to understand the stereotype that male officers are more likely to be involved in police brutality than females are. Although women represent a bigger portion of the police force, especially in big cities, most highly publicized cases of police brutality have involved male officers. In Indianapolis, only two officer-involved shootings between 2014 and 16 were connected to female officers. But in Austin, over a 14-year period, that number was just one. Yet, as before, other data may tell some different stories. In Cincinnati, for example, nearly 12.5% of officer-involved shootings included a female officer. That number actually is almost the same as the proportion of female officers in its police force. So if you looked at that standing alone by itself, it would almost be that every woman is involved in a shooting in Cincinnati, and that's not the case. The lack of a single conclusive finding may be frustrating to everybody trying to support their opinions with data or statistics, and everybody's got an opinion about it. Believe me, everybody does. But it does show that the situation is more complex than most people think. One conclusion that we can reach is that different cities have variations in police violence and the racial parts of that violence because of their differences in community police department relations. You got to admit, in some cities, and we see them all the time when these protests begin, some cities are comprised of people that just go crazy, absolutely crazy. Other cities get very upset but don't go absolutely nuts. That's going to play a role in the public perception of police brutality. I can promise you that. Officer T, remember him from Cincinnati? He explained the differences he sees in his city, where the racial and gender gap in officer-involved violence is less obvious than in other places. We're not all trained the same, regardless of whether you're an Asian officer or a black officer, and in Cincinnati we have good relations with the public. It helps. Our city has gone out and explained why it does things and how it helps, and the citizens of our city embrace our police department because they understand why we're there. Officer T compared this example of good community relations with what he sees as a more common national trend. In general, he said, citizens themselves say they want police in their neighborhoods, like in New York in the 80s. Remember the cocaine-related deaths that were going on then? And the city administration put a bunch of extra officers in neighborhoods back in the 80s. Officer T said, after about 10 years of people enjoying that police presence in New York neighborhoods, they forgot the original reason for the police presence and began to view cops in a bad light. I think residents often forget over time why police are even there. This one's not going to be an easy fix, folks, but we can start understanding it, and that's what we're doing today. We're just starting to understand it. Breathe deep, take a break. Be back with a wrap-up right after this.
Bye. chocolate.
Chocolate.
You love M&Ms.
Oh, yes.
But your tastes have grown up, and you're just not wild about super sweet milk chocolate, so you've been avoiding M&Ms.
Yeah.
Well, fear no more.
Huh?
M&Ms Dark Chocolate to the rescue.
My heroes!
M&Ms Dark Chocolate Candies. Available wherever fine candies are sold.
Hi, I'm Jet Williams. Even though I never knew my father, Hank Williams, his legacy taught me the meaning of lending a helping hand. That's why I support the Orphan Foundation of America. OFA is committed to providing education, mentoring, and a workplace readiness for thousands of teens aging out of the foster care system. With the help of OFA's support programs, these young people can go to college and trade school, graduate, and make the leap from foster care to success. To learn how you can help, visit orphan.org.
We're talking about police brutality, trying to get some handles on understanding the facts about it, and we're referencing a Harvard review that recently was published with some interesting facts. Looking back at the big questions surrounding the blame for police brutality, why it is so often about white male officers and what data says about the stereotype, the majority of stats supported by years of studies that white and black officers are equally likely to use force against black subjects. This suggests the idea of individual police officers being racist against blacks is not accurate throughout the nation. While individual officers' biases play a large role in significantly higher rates of violence against blacks in some places, the real source of anti-black bias in other places is often social, community, or institutional reasons. We talked about that a bit ago. That data may point toward a need for further research into the structure of local legal systems and law enforcement agencies. And we know there is a big disparity in the nation between certain cities and police brutality. Checking these out probably going to shed some light on sources of anti-black bias that are ingrained in regional institutions. To explain why the stereotype of white males being responsible for police brutality exists in the minds of the public, consider not only the facts and figures of the present, but also their historical context and significance. History exists, says Feldman, and there's a very long history in the U.S. of either white police officers or white vigilantes committing explicitly racist acts of violence against blacks. Though it is unrealistic to propose any single solution to this terrible social issue, being objective and transparent data analysis and statistics thrown in make it better than scrambling for broad surface-level stats or relying solely upon the emotional stories that are passed around every time there's a shooting. Using data doesn't take away from the emotional core of the issue. And as I said this earlier, we're all humans. We're made up of intellect and emotions. We've got to deal with the emotional core of it. Historical data about officer-involved lynchings and shootings of African Americans certainly reminds us of the old days of Jim Crow racism. Modern numbers of the emotional and mental attitudes of the local police force can show how ramped up the sentiments of different groups of people are. Data in both cases may have a strong impact on individuals who feel accepted, affected, or threatened by these issues. Feldman spoke at length on this combination of emotional and statistical combination in the police brutality issue. He said data can be emotional. He said this, I don't see the difference. There is this idea that social problems are technical problems and can be solved through technical solutions. I don't think that's how the world works, especially on this issue, when data is so politically charged and it does question politics and power in different groups of people who view the world in profoundly different ways. Thorough data analysis performed on a considerable amount of case or region-specific data reveals the mistake of proposing ineffective one-size-fits-all cure-alls, such as increasing the racial and gender disparities of all police departments. The stats don't support that, folks. It doesn't work. Instead, policymakers and social scientists should identify the cause of the police brutality problem to suggest more realistic solutions by analyzing data. For example, data can be used to show which department feature the most serious examples of police brutality in order to more effectively target critical cities. Data may also help show which levels of violence different demographics are most susceptible to. Doing this would obviously improve understanding of the how complex these issues are. Some solutions may involve improving the quality of the data available for future research. By finding gaps, inconsistencies, weaknesses in currently available stats, scientists and policymakers, along with the public, can demand police departments release more specific information to everybody. We need more information, more real data, more specific stuff. Get the emotions out of all this. Doing so would show the public transparency, not just promise it, and improve citizens' understanding of just how complicated is the issue of police brutality. There certainly is a big problem out there. And there certainly are no easy answers. All the rhetoric, pro and con, without any or very little factual basis, especially when there are statistics and data out there to base these conversations on, isn't helping anybody. We got to start using facts. As we get the facts, let's start using them. But we're deeply divided in this racial America right now. Who is there? Who's out there that is capable and willing to pull people from both sides of the issue together to discuss these and future statistical findings without screaming at each other? I don't have a clue. All I can tell you this is the racial fathers that are out there in both sides of this issue, black and white, the ones that are out there right now that are touting themselves to be the arbiters of what's right and what's wrong and what's fair and what's not fair, they're not the real deal. Nobody has stepped up to take the lead that is qualified, that is willing, and that is honest. And I don't have a clue who that is. I'm being totally transparent to you when I tell you that. All that we're seeing now is finger pointing and screaming across a divided table that gets more and more divided every day. Just look at what happened this past week with the NFL publishing their new idea on protesting at the national anthem time before NFL games. Once again, another chapter. Same rhetoric. Same people on both sides of the issue are saying, you know, they have every right to do it. They should be doing it. And people on the other side are saying, why are you denigrating the flag? It's the same song, second verse. It's got to be fixed. Police brutality is real. It's there. We've got to get rid of it. It's wrong. And we've got to get rid of it means we've got to do it together. Continuing that process of screaming and hollering is just plain stupid. I said it. It's just plain stupid. And folks, Americans are not stupid. We can do this. We got to get it done. Thank you so much for listening in. If you'd like a copy of this, drop me an email at dan@dnewman.org. I'll send you the study. dan@dnewman.org. Thanks for joining us at the beginning of this week. Have a great day. Have a great week. We'll be back. So long, everybody.
Just because you think something's right doesn't mean it's right. Just because you think something's wrong doesn't mean it's wrong. But always get the truth about right and wrong here at dnewman.org.
From the pockets of players. The perception of people is that kneeling during the national anthem, not of all people, but of most people. And obviously, the results are showing that. Most people say you have a right to protest. Of course, you've got a First Amendment right to say anything except, you know, cry fire in a crowded theater. You could say anything. But you're an employee of a football team. You're an American. America and the people that we're going to celebrate on Monday for giving their lives for this country, Americans are the one group that gave you the opportunity to make millions of dollars. You know what the minimum salary for an NFL player is? $435,000 a year. $435,000 a year. A kicker that may play six plays in a game makes a minimum of $435,000 a year. It's a great living. It's a great opportunity. And as I said, many of these guys would play for free, as they have most of their careers in football.